Hey, what's going on, everyone? Thanks for tuning back to the YouTube channel, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you're finding us. I'm super excited to introduce to you my, we call it committed colleague in Landmark's team leadership and management program. I think maybe the ordering is off there, but I'm really excited to bring to you Kimberly Heisman, who's been such a wonderful partner to me. And yeah, it's been cool. We've been chatting every day and just really excited to what you're up to.
Thank you so much, Davidson, for inviting me on. I mean, as a committed colleague, you're committed to my, team management leadership program, game in the world, and you've taken this hour of your life to record this, and I really am, I'm really grateful. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And just a little bit more about you. Looks like you have a pretty interesting background. Very impressive. You graduated from Eastern Illinois University in biology and business administration, and you've done entrepreneurial studies with the Fast Track Kauffman Institute, and you have a certification in clean tech solutions, renewable energy. Also very impressive that you have a master's a public administration and sustainability. And yeah, it's very clear that you're committed to making the world a better, more sustainable place. And then you've also had a ton of experience with policy and with the United Nations Development Program. You've also were the executive director of POP Sustainability, the community chief community officer at Shine Solutions with Community Solar. And now you have your own copywriting business and you do a lot of content marketing. And yeah, just you've accomplished a lot in life. So very grateful to be in your presence.
Thank you. I didn't realize we were doing the whole resume thing, but I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I guess it means for me, it's I've got some sensitive topics to talk about today, so I think that hopefully puts a little bit my experience, it puts it, things in perspective, which is something that I really do want to I really do want to do. Thank you.
Yes, yeah. So, I know that you have a really big heart just from us working together and us chatting every day. And I know recently you've gone through some pretty challenging moments. If you want to share a little bit more about, well, what the game in the world is, because I think people that haven't done Landmark might be a little bit curious about, oh, what does that even mean? And then maybe if you want to share a little bit about your vision on that, that'd be great.
Okay, so Landmark is a personal and professional development, program. Starts with one course called the Landmark Forum, and we've done some further programs called the Communication Program, Communication Access to Power, and Power to Create, and then landed ourselves in this great team management program where we take on a game in our personal life, but a game in the world as well. And the game in the world is an opportunity to really test out our team management, and our team building skills, and our ability to just enroll people in what we're up to and get things done and make a difference. Ultimately, make a difference in the world. Really tap into our higher powers, and my game in the world is it's called, oh geez, what is it called? It's transformational justice. And it comes from a recent experience. I can't even believe it. It's less than 2 months ago this happened to me. And it comes from a recent experience, and it really is the intention to find doable angles to shift the conversation and shift the experience of people in the criminal justice, system, basically. So, and so mine is going to be supporting a bail project fundraising campaign, and that's what I've come up with. And there's another campaign that's linked to it as well. But so I guess I should go into what happened.
Yeah.
So I was visiting my son in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was very sad to leave. You know, I just love him so much. And I miss him. And I was going through the Atlanta airport on my way to go see my father, who I haven't seen because of COVID. And, you know, he lost his wife. And there's a lot that's been going on these last couple of years for all of us. And I was emotional. I got into the airport. I was going through TSA. I was talking to a friend of mine on the phone, you know, expressing, you know, just venting, I guess. Put all my belongings, you know, I had a big suitcase. I had my laptop bag. I had my purse and I had my phone. And I put it all in those trays that comes out on the other side, and I couldn't find my phone. And I knew I just had it. And, you know, I wasn't sure, because, you know, you still have to put your shoes back on and gather yourself and, you know, get all your possessions. And then I was not sure whether I could go back in from, you know, that direction and approach the TSA people. I know there's just strict protocols. And a police officer noticed that I was a little disheveled, maybe. And I wasn't upset so much as just a little confused. I think I just was not sure what to do next. And a police officer came up to me and asked if I needed assistance. I said I was missing my phone. What should I do? Can I go back in? And he just said, wait. And they also told me multiple times, just calm down. Like, you know, it was the weirdest thing because I didn't see myself as, you know, like not calm or something. Anyway, this ended up in an arrest. And I was so shocked. I couldn't, you know, I just couldn't make sense of it. And I still can't make sense of it. It just makes no sense to me. The police officer just wasn't helping me. He was not being there as a public servant. It occurred to me that he was just trying to get an arrest. And as a woman walking by myself, I've traveled through third world developed countries. I've lived in South Africa for 7 years. I mean, I never experienced anything with the police like this. And the next few days became quite a nightmare, dealing with the prison system in a county south of Fulton County called Clayton County. And, you know, I had to realize that the way they were speaking to me once I got there was immediately that I had no rights. I had no, you know, there was nothing that they were going to do to really in any way assist me. They just sort of funneled me into this system. And you know, you're basically strip searched. I mean, I basically strip searched and put in prison clothing, put in solitary confinement, which averaged 22 hours a day. And the you know, you can't get the phones. The phones are not they don't take reverse charges. You know, my possessions were taken from me, you know, and so there was no money to be paying for phone calls. And this prison, the way it was all set up, was really set up to keep people in that system. Just like really channel them in and hold them in there. And I was the only white person there in my like prison block. I did have a chance to talk to the other girls. There was no one had a violent crime. No one had a real, you know, besides misdemeanor offenses, you know. Over 50% did not have anything serious happen. And so I took it that this is just the way it works in Georgia. and this experience, which took me 2 days to get out of, you know, an $1,850 bail for, you know, being emotional around a police officer, you know. And it just really, really left me with an impression of the prison system, particularly in the South, I suppose. You know, I don't think anything like this could have happened to us in New York. Hmm. And I was just left with that, you know, this is, you know, this is an entrapment. The truth is that in any day in the United States, and I'm just going to pull up some quotes from the Bail Project, nearly 500,000 people are sitting in jail cells for pre-trial criminal cases. And if you think about it, I was accused of something, but I was not proven guilty, but I was treated guilty, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone was treated guilty because this is pre-trial. You've not been proved guilty. And that's 2/3 of the jail population today. So, you know, we're supposed to be presumed innocent. That's our civil rights. That's in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Innocent until proven guilty. And, you know, this criminalizes people in poverty. If you don't have that money, and you know, so if you don't have that money to get out, you're stuck, you know, and you can be there for months. You know, it takes you away from your family, lose your children, your job, you know, you can't reach the community. You don't have your phone numbers to even contact the outside world. And I'm just one little grain of sand in this system I had this experience, but I think some people have, you know, judgments about this system and what it takes to end up in the system, right? And sometimes it takes very little. Sometimes it takes very little. And I'm not saying you can end all of these practices. There are times when it's, you know, criminal justice system needs to be protecting us. And there are good police officers, but you know, the way that the system is set up with with police officers nationwide, I think New York passed something recently. Colorado passed a law recently to end qualified immunity. It means that under certain circumstances, police officers can be brought, you know, to court to answer for their, you know, their actions during an arrest, or, you know, sometimes things happen within the system, as in in the jail where I was. I saw a woman get battered right in front of me, bloodied, and dragged, you know, she needed psychiatric attention. She was not given that. So even that those corrections officers have qualified immunity, even for their actions. That they're basically immune from any kind of prosecution to protect them from doing, you know, the mistakes that they could make. Now, you know, we know from George Floyd, those mistakes can be really, really serious. And Black and brown people in this country happen to know that any kind of, you know, conversation with a police officer is dangerous, right? And that's why. So actually, there's also a campaign that Ben and Jerry from Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream are doing called the Campaign to End Qualified Immunity. They're trying to get several bills pushed to Congress so that in certain circumstances, I'm not saying every circumstance, right? But in certain circumstances, especially when someone was injured and their rights were violated, that police officers will be held to account. So the Campaign to End Qualified Immunity is exactly the website. I think it's .org, the Campaign to End Qualified Immunity. And there's thousands of people, artists. They've brought in artists, business people, athletes, you know, and there's thousands of people backing it publicly to see if we can push this through. So that's one thing, but my actual, what I want to accomplish with my Game in the World is to raise $10,000 for the Bail Project, and that's bailproject.org. They're doing fantastic work. They've created a revolving fund so that people, when they get into jail, they can contact them, and if they qualify, you know, nonviolent crimes, if they qualify, they can get free bail, and they'll get community services that help them to show up. You know, the bail is there to ensure you show up in court, right? So they help these people to show up in court and help them with their legal needs. They help them with whatever community services. They provide transportation, et cetera, to get to court. You know, they help them to get organized around childcare and everything else, you know, getting the day off of work, et cetera, that they need to do. So once that bail is paid back to the Bail Project, when the person shows up at court, then that money is then used for the next person. That's a revolving fund, right? So I intend that my $10,000 will assist at least 100 people over the next several years to get bail and for free and get out as quickly as possible and get back to their lives, you know, so that they can, you know, avoid the consequences. Sometimes quite severe, of being, you know, separated from your community and your family. So that's my campaign.
Wow, thank you for sharing. Yeah, I mean, it takes courage to share about this, because, you know, when you talk about it, people can often relive some of those really hard traumas, right? So, you know, I know it's not easy. So thank you for sharing so openly.
Here's the thing also. I told my family I had to, because my father was waiting for me at the airport. And some of the comments that I got, not from my father, but from other family members, I just was, you know, well, you shouldn't have done what you did. I mean, I was like, but you weren't there. How can you say? So there's some trust in law. And I do believe you should trust most officers, right? Yeah. But there was some lingering doubt that I had done something that I deserved to be in jail, right? And that's something that I think is, you know, again, it's a sensitive matter. I don't want to, you know, I have a professional career. I don't want people to think that. So most people would just go and bury the story. You know, I'm not really going to have so much consequences to me. Probably the case will get dropped. I mean, there's the charges were ridiculous. I mean, they're, you know, what they wrote, it's not even true. And so, yeah, it's, you know, people just don't want to talk about it. It's risky. And, you know, so, you know, in our social.
Yeah.
Environment. So.
I mean, I think it's a power thing, right? I think when people abuse power, not, like you said, not every police officer is bad, right? I think most people go into the profession wanting to be of service, right? Because at the end of the day, they are still risking their lives, right? But it's the few that really abuse the power and get away with it, right? That really they think they're above the law, or they don't want to face the consequences, right? So, yeah, it's tough. You know, I used to live with a police officer, and I would see him get like beat up, right, in Camden, like where we used to live, like down in South Jersey. He would come back with like bloody noses, and like he would just get beat up. He was a little guy like me, but, you know, and as a police officer, like sometimes, you know, you risk your life. And yeah, I mean, it's a very challenging job. At the same time, if no one talks about this, then he's just going to keep getting away with it, right? So, you know, it takes, and then people are afraid of, like you said, the repercussions, right? I think when we challenge the law, when we challenge anyone or anyone that has power, there's a lot of people are just afraid that something might happen, you know, and that's not right.
Yeah, exactly. There was something on PBS news the other day, and it was an international, it was a conversation with international police officers from, there was from the UK, from France, in some other country, I don't know, another English, they were speaking English, but they had done this study, and the average number of hours that police are trained, right, in different countries. But in the United States, they were comparing it to, so like, do you think your police officer should be trained more than a barber, or more than a taxi driver, or more than, you know, a lawyer, or, you know, where do you think it should be? And of course, it was above barber, above taxi driver,
right?
You know, and the fact is that police officers in the United States, on average, are trained less than barbers. People cutting your hair have more training as to their job, when in the legal, the whole legal side of things. So, you know, you can't always blame the officers, but at the same time,
system. You know,
we have to be able to hold people to account.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, just thinking out loud, but I know the prison system, or it's about money, right? Like, they make a lot of money building these prisons, and like the millions and billions of dollars that go into that industry alone, like that in itself, it's controversial, right? There's just a lot of money in that system.
Well, it turns out, and this is something that's on the Bail Project's website, American taxpayers pay $14 billion each year to incarcerate people for pretrial. So not only did, you know, I mean, just keeping me in that prison, keeping everyone that was in there in the prison is quite a big cost. You know, and the bail industry itself is predatory and exploitative, you know, extracting money from the people in our communities that have the least resources.
Mm. Yeah. And to go back to that, and just being, even spending one day like in prison, right? Like you said, like really does damage your sense of ego and sense of worth, right? Like my dad, I think he was only there for one day, but that he was never the same guy ever since, you know, like once that happened, he just left us and never came back. Like, so that like clearly changed him, you know, and he, I don't think he deserved, he didn't do anything wrong. Like, I don't think he deserved to, you know, and sometimes it's a communication thing. His English isn't that great. Sometimes, you know, whatever the case may be, like you said, like, it really does have a huge impact on our society, especially those who are low income, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. It does. And I can tell you, I was not well.
Yeah.
So when they left, I got released in the middle of the night with none of my possessions. My possessions were actually stored like 25 plus miles away. I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have money. And I was, you know, in the dark in a, like a strange city in the South. I had no idea what to do. And I was homeless for the night. So they endangered me doing that, these practices, you know. I don't even think anyone, I mean, I never knew they did that kind of thing. And so, you know, the things that it's meant to be damaging. It seems like it is to me, like literally. This particular jail, interestingly enough, was run by Sheriff Victor Hill, and he's now been arrested and indicted for torturing people in that prison. You know, there's an ACLU case that's come up, but it's there's multiple incidents, you know. So, you know, again, he would have qualified immunity, but I don't think that's just. I think he needs to be held to account.
Yeah. There's so much, these things that are put in place that, you know, clearly, like, there's people that are benefiting from these things, right? And, you know, as a society, like, you know, like, you think we're making progress and you hear about this. And then, like you said, I think a lot of people aren't even aware that any of this, right? It's like, we just, if we don't talk about it, then it doesn't exist, right? I think that's the mentality.
I think especially amongst our white, you know, society, you know, it just, it seems, you know, like it's not, not our problem.
Yeah, not my issue. Yeah.
And I care deeply about people and the environment and sustainability for me, you know, has a very strong people component. It's not just, you know, tree huggers. It's not just about, you know, climate change. It is about people and social justice. You know, this is very important to me, but I never was that clear about what's really going on. I was never exposed to this kind of thing. And now I just can't, you know, I can't close my eyes to it.
Yeah. I think it's easier to pretend like everything is okay. And, you know, I know when I was younger, it was interesting because I was exposed to a lot of this because I lived in like a low income housing where most of the people around me had government like subsidies, including myself. But even then I didn't want to choose. It was hard for me to like choose to be with it. So I would just kind of block it out from my memory. But I do remember like a lot of the people I grew up with like died at a pretty young age, you know, and it was just crazy. Like looking back at it, I was like, oh, wow, no, that was a part of my life. Like even within my family, like a lot of folks have gone to jail, you know, and after being in jail for that long, like you're never the same, you know, you don't have trust in society. You don't trust anyone. Like there's a lot of consequences and, you know, the impacts are far reaching. Right. But I don't think a lot of us talk about these things very often, right? There's not a lot of spaces where people talk about this openly in general.
And clearly there are times when going, you know, incarcerating someone is necessary. And then I do believe that the system has a responsibility to, you know, really look how, I don't know if rehabilitate is the right word, but look how we can really help people improve their own lives, you know, and get them back on track and get them into a, back connected and back safe in their communities.
Yeah, there's a lot. And then I remember like during Landmark, the stories that really resonated with me, that really shook me at my core were when amazing people that you can tell like just have a genuine heart and mean like want to do so much for the world. But as soon as you have that on your record, it's impossible to get a job anywhere, right? So I remember crying because there was a guy who, you know, he was so passionate about what he did and he just loves meeting people. And, you know, he would do really good job and become like almost employee of the month, right? And then after every 6 months, they would just do like a backroom check for some reason. And then he would get let go. And then the same cycle happened at every single job. And it was just so sad to hear him be so open about it and how devastating it was for him, you know?
Yeah, that seems very unfair, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's not workable, you know, it's unacceptable.
Yeah. I know one of my friends, he has a company where a lot of the incarcerated folks, you know, that have finished, and he creates like food, like they're all chefs. So he hires like people that have been incarcerated. So he's been doing that, right? But he was just saying, yeah, like, you know, like the society labels them and they essentially have no more no more opportunities, right? It's like once you're in there, like forget about it, you know, you're not even treated as a human anymore.
Yeah, and the levels of incarceration in the United States are higher than any other country in the world. So, you know, you get thrown into the system and then just, you know, it's unspeakable that our country could consider itself, you know, an advanced first world country when these kinds of things are just so normal.
Yeah, it is fascinating, right? I mean, the amount of money that we spend in our system, you know, there's just so much, like, imagine if we, even just putting people in jail for like marijuana and stuff like that, right? It's just, I mean, it sounds like we're making progress, but it's just crazy the amount of money and resources that we spend on things like that that can really be used to help the world and help our society in so many more ways, you know?
Absolutely. The true economic cost of this whole thing is put it at crisis levels, really.
Yeah, well, how can others be, get involved with some of these initiatives? You know, it sounds like what was your process? Like, did you Google or how'd you go about finding out about a lot of these different initiatives and programs?
I did do some research, but I also had friends who recommended me to the Bell Project, and I looked into it. It's a very, very, very responsible organization. They want to end bail, so like they basically put themselves out of a job, so that this revolving fund that they're creating is not there to continue the process of bail. You know, it's meant to, you know, they only go into areas where they know they can actually work with the whole legal system there, to end the use of bail in that community. So in New York has ended, for misdemeanor and nonviolent offenses, there's no more bail in New York. But it's a lot of places that, I mean, particularly through the South. So the Bail Project has a end, and the end, the bail in the South, a campaign like that. So this is part of what I'm inviting people to participate in. But the Bail Project itself, is in many different communities. So bailproject.org. But my crowdfunding campaign website, I'll provide it to you. It's a little bit later, but people can go on and give and help to keep people from, these really tragic circumstances that they've been thrown into, and save lives, literally save lives.
Yes, thank you so much for your vulnerability, your heart, and wanting to make a difference in the world, right? I think it's much easier for us to kind of just like, oh, someone else will do it, or like not. I think sometimes it's easier to play it safe, right? But like you said, you're putting yourself out there, you're having these conversations, you're sharing your story, and I think it all starts with just sharing yourself, right? And just being open and honest. That's the only way there would be change, right? If people are aware of this issue, or if people actually know what's going on, right? Because a lot of us live in these bubbles, but we forget that we're all responsible, right? It's each one of us has an opportunity, or we can continue to just stay in the bubble and pretend that everything is okay, right? It's your choice ultimately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I really thank you so much, Davidson, for taking the time out today, and for, hearing the story, for putting it out there, and helping me, to disseminate this information, and just really get the campaign going.
Yeah, I'm excited for you.
The lovely ladies that I met, believe me, I'm not, lovely ladies that I met in jail. We have them.
I mean, we're all human, right? And I believe in forgiveness, right? I believe that everyone gets a second chance, right? Like one of my favorite movies is Catch Me If You Can. And I think he ended up catching so many criminals, right? So he was clearly someone that has created, done a lot of wrong things in his life, and he still doesn't forgive himself for everything that he's contributed, but he's given so much back to society, right? I think that's an opportunity. That's someone who, was able to really impact the world and be able to give back in so many different ways, right? So I do believe in second chances.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you,
Care.
Davidson.